And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 298. Continuing on from our Draft Champions Primer, talking post 500 ADP picks as we do each and every year, and realize just how not great we are at some of these. But we'll get to that and much more. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, because I assume you're not listening to this on Thanksgiving. Hope you guys had a good time, friends, family, whatever you took part in. But before we get to the picks and more, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
We're doing good, man. Yeah, draft and hold week lives on. Happy to wade through the muck of post 500 ADP with you guys. There's no one I'd rather wade through muck with than you, Bubba. So here we are.
Thanks, man.
Spending our holiday week talking about post 500 picks. But hey, if we're doing draft and holds, even if you're in these 12 teamers, this is what, the last 10 rounds of a 12 teamer?
I just made my 44th round pick right before the show, and that's pick 522.
You go. So if you're doing these draft and holds, like, yeah, the first few rounds are fun. Yeah, the middle rounds are most important, but you also need to focus a little bit of time on this post 500 stuff. So that's what we're trying to do. It is muck. A lot of these won't hit. We're hoping that some of them do, but excited for this one. This is one where, yeah, we're digging really deep, and I don't know, it's fun to dive this deep into the player pool in November.
Yes, it's always a good process, because at worst, like if they're not in your DC teams, a lot of these guys at some point in time will be on a Thursday night fab show with myself and Ryan.
Well, that's throughout exactly. The season. I mean, that comes up throughout the season. It's like some of these guys will get called up, and it's like, yeah, I do actually remember diving into this guy. I mean, that's one of the benefits, side benefits or whatever, for me for draft and hold right now, is you're at least getting familiar with some of these names, because at some point, even in your fab leagues, they will hopefully become relevant.
Yep, agree. They should become relevant, hopefully become relevant, and we'll see where it goes. But when we left you guys, if you listened to the primer episode before this, we recapped the top three teams in the overall in the DC, the teams to the three best is essentially how that worked. And one of the takeaways was you could build them any way you want. There's lots of ways to build them. One of the other takeaways that I took, and I don't know if you did, I won't speak for you, but we mentioned it a few times and you highlighted it a few times, is the back half of your draft, not a lot of hits. So I start with that to say, we're going to talk about post 500 picks. We're going to recap our picks from last year. Not as many hits as you'd think, but if you think back to the teams that did really well,
yeah,
all you need is a couple hits, and that goes a long, long ways to this process. So not sure if you had anything else to add to that before we recap our picks.
Yeah, and not even like hit. So like your definition of hit could vary too. Like if some of these post 40 round guys you at least use for a few weeks and do something on your team, that I consider that a hit. But yeah, when we went through the kind of those top three overall teams, and again, top three overall out of 5,000, this is the elite of the elite of the elite. There was probably a 20% hit rate in these last 10 to 15 rounds on average for those three teams. So you're just trying to take your shots. You're trying to do it selectively. You're trying to mix a little bit of upside with playing time safety and trying to get a few usable weeks out of these guys. If you get an actual breakout from some of these guys, I mean, that's the holy grail. That's even better. But I think for a lot of these picks, at least when I was going through my post 500 ADP team, just kind of trying to look for several weeks of usable value for some of these guys. If you can extract that out of your last 10 rounds, I think that can help you a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And you made a great point there. You kind of hit it on the primer show, is it's not like you might look at the end of the season player rater ranking. It doesn't justify when you use them. They might've been good for 2 weeks here. Like the Andrew Vaughn thing, I remember back on, like he finished like 2/10 on the primer, but I think we all know if you had Andrew Vaughn in the second half, you used him a lot, and that helped you a ton when all things were said and done. So like end of season rankings are not the end all be all when it comes to draft champions, to the point that we're both trying to make here. So when we talk these post 500 picks, they don't have to be elite. It's just, were they elite when you needed them to be, type thing? Are they serviceable when you just
needed them? Did you get you know, a couple homers in a week or something like that? Yeah, and not even elite, just did you use them, and were they participating in your success?
Looking at my list, there's a few that did not participate at all. So that's the start.
What, from but, last year?
Yeah, I can't say this year yet, unfortunately, because I haven't got to do all that fun stuff, and I can't read into the future. But let's recap our picks from last year, and let's see how things rolled here, Ryan. So we'll go back and forth. I'll start catcher, of course. I had Drake Baldwin. Say that worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
You had Edgar Caro, though. That worked out pretty well also.
Yeah, I don't know. You got a little bit of a midseason bump with Edgar Caro. Drake Baldwin, I think that's probably the best. We're leading off with the best, so it's probably, it's kind of downhill from here. But Drake Baldwin, that's what you dream of with these last few picks. Drake Baldwin, I think, finished top 150 on the player rater. To get that, especially from a catcher, is massive. So that was, I would say, out of our two combined teams last year, Drake Baldwin was probably our best pick combined.
After starting with the top, obviously the catching position with Drake Baldwin dominating and Caro doing well, we went to first base where I took the ginger himself, Justin Turner. That did not turn out to be great. There was expectations he would platoon with Matt Shaw. That did not happen. Matt Bush. That did not happen. Bush decided to dominate, so things went well there. You went with Zach DiCenzo, who I was a big fan of at the time. That didn't pan out either because the Astros – apparently just don't like to play prospects. And then he got hurt.
The rare occasion where I go with the youth and you go with an old. So yeah, that was my hope with DiCenzo, but you cannot predict how some of these teams will do. So 0-for-2 at first base.
What do you got at second base?
I had my guy, Ahmed Rosario. it'll be 2040. I'm taking a 46-year-old Ahmed Rosario. That did not work either.
Yeah, I had Thomas Segese, who I was very, very high on coming into the season. Got playing time towards the end because of injuries at second base and shortstop, hit for average. So I'd say he panned out quite well, actually, all things considered. Ironically, not set to have a job entering 2026, but these are the kind of guys you take late, just hoping they get their opportunity and can take advantage of it. And Segese did just enough to do that. At shortstop, I took a gamble on Scott Kingery because the shortstop position in Anaheim was a mess, and Kingery didn't do jack squat.
Did not. Still got his contract, though, so that's awesome. I went this is one of my better ones. Romy Gonzalez at technically shortstop, but also played, first and second base?
Yep.
So played everywhere. Hit 305 over 341 plate appearances, 9 homers, 6 steals. And I think the biggest thing, too, it was like, and this is important in draft and holds, it was like really nice spurts, like a few good weeks of production. So like while you're, Romy Gonzalez, a season long dollar value or whatever, wasn't spectacular. Romy Gonzalez was super useful at a few different spots. So I that one worked out for me, and I took plenty of Romy Gonzalez too.
That's a good one that worked out. Your third base pick worked out as well.
Brett Beatty. This is kind of and I've got a few other kind of this year's Brett Beatty types, I think, on my post 500 team for this year. But this was a Brett Beatty where prospect pedigree just hurt, didn't really get consistent playing time his first year or so in the majors. That finally did happen, especially in the second half for Beatty. That one worked out. I think was third base, second base eligible as well. So another multi-position guy that really worked out for me.
I went with Oswaldo Cabrera, thinking he was supposed to get time at third base with the Yanks. He did, just never really panned out, and they started moving people around. And wasn't the late round, because I was looking to get a starting third baseman post 500. That seems pretty appealing to me, and it didn't last as long as I thought it would. That's what she said.
That is what she said. God, my two outfielders, I took Alec Thomas and Hunter Renfro. I like that Hunter Renfro pick, but
yeah,
didn't really work out. Alec Thomas got playing time. He had 469 plate appearances, but it was pretty empty. So like I just said, Romy Gonzalez's line and about half a season of plate appearances, pretty much the same line for Alec Thomas, except for it was a 249 batting average, except for 300. And it was spaced out over a ton of plate appearances. So like, yes, while Alec Thomas played, had 51 runs, 38 RBI, probably used him a little bit in 15 teamers. I mean, wasn't a zero, but I'm not really chalking that up as a win either.
Yeah, I'm with you there. For me, we'll start with Tirso Ornelas, who I was very, very high on. That did
the body part.
Body part that he barely got even a chance. Like the Padres with their call-ups was a whole other story. But Luis Matos, he had his moments, not as many moments as you probably hoped for, but he did have some run where he was kind of serviceable, especially in September. He had a lot more playing time, but he wasn't anything special. But he had his moments, is what I'll say, with Matos last season. Starting pitchers, honestly, I'll take one of my two did well. Both of yours did pretty good, all things considered, post 500. Landon Roop, I think, did really well until he got hurt. Yep. Like he was throwing a ton, so you got plenty out of him. Yulber Diaz never got run. He got hurt also. He's one that I think 2026 you could maybe turn back to potentially. He's got skills. It's just a matter of a role. But I like what I did with Landon Roop. But I liked your two picks. They did decent.
Yeah, kind of. One of them. I don't know. Neither of them.
Well, it depends on what decent is. Yes, they got innings. Right.
Like, so they got some innings. I mean, Brandon Sproat was one of my picks. I fell into the prospect trap, Bubba. Finally fell into the prospect trap and took Brandon Sproat, who was a pretty big helium guy in terms of draft and holds last year because the minor league numbers and whatnot, but only got 20 innings. Decent skills, but still posted a 4.79 ERA. In those 20 innings, so not really counting that one. Cade Cavalli is one where, like, that was my other pick. Process-wise, I would make that pick 10 times out of 10. Again, I knew Cade Cavalli was not going to give me anything in the first half. Cade Cavalli did come up and throw 48 innings for Washington the second half of last year. That's kind of what I wanted. And posted a 4.25 ERA. I guess he wasn't that bad. Cade Cavalli is one of my favorite. He's not post 500 anymore, but he's one of my favorite later starting pitcher targets for 2026 too. I just think the actual underlying skills for Cade Cavalli were much better than the surface stats led on. I think he's got another year removed from major surgery. So I think that's nice. I think this pick kind of process wise worked out pretty well, and depends when you use Cade Cavalli. He was good at the beginning and then kind of unraveled late, but that I feel like process wise this was a win, and this is the type of profile for a pitcher that I'm looking at post 500.
Yeah, definitely, it's a great profile to look at post 500. On the relief pitching side, I'll just start. I had Hunter Biggie. I love the profile, the hard throwing, going to Tampa. I loved everything about it. Fairbanks just didn't get traded again. That's what it came down to. Is more, yep, like I was waiting for Fairbanks to get out of the way. And that's kind of what you're looking for in these late round relief pitcher picks. They're either already in a platoon or you're looking for them to be the guy that's next. And Biggie never got that chance.
I went with Jesus Tinoco, just maybe hoping that Miami would settle on one closer. They did not. I mean, the good doctor, Calvin Fauché, was kind of the primary. Ronnie Enriquez got some saves. Tinoco got four saves, two wins, but only threw 19 innings. I don't know. He was in the mix, but just didn't throw enough. So I wouldn't say that was a win either, because I probably did not have Tinoco active for those four saves.
That's the biggest problem with that mess over there, is when did you actually have either, right, one? I had Fauché in a lot, and I guarantee I missed out on
by half. I remember benching. Fauché would get 2-3 saves in a week and then nothing for a couple weeks. And yeah, it was tough.
Very tough. But that is what post 500 ADP picks are. So let's get tougher and let's talk 2026. Picks here. We'll go back and forth. We'll make our picks. We'll state our cases. Remember, folks, these are not your primary starters. Honestly, you hope to never have to use them. But if things pan out, then they became stars, or you just have a lot of red suitcases. Here they are. That's kind of the game plan here. So, Ryan, since we're talking catchers, I'll let you go first on this one.
Whoa. Okay. I'm going to go someone who actually, I think, has the starting role in Joey Bart. Granted, it is the Pittsburgh Pirates, but as we often say on this show, target playing time on bad teams, especially in these deep leagues and draft and hold. So Joey Bart, I think, is at least to start the season the primary guy in Pittsburgh. Only hit 4 home runs and 332 plate appearances last year, right? Like, there is a reason why these guys are going after 500. But power rebounded quite well for Joey Bart in the second half. Had a, let's see, I'm looking at the forecaster, 13% barrel rate in the second half last year, and hit 260 over 127 plate appearances. That at least has life. This is a guy with some prospect pedigree, of course, as you know, as a former Giant. This is also someone who has done it before in the big leagues. I mean, Joey Bart in 2024, his first year with Pittsburgh, 13 homers, 265 batting average in just 282 plate appearances. So, and still just age 29 season. So I think all those things combined, you've got the playing time, you have some semblance of a track record there. And if you're able to get that post 500, I think that's, for me, a third catcher. I think I've taken Joey Bart as my third catcher in both of my draft and hold so far this season. And I've been pretty happy with it. Again, not expecting much, but, you know, could be better than a zero if one of my starting catchers goes down.
Yep. Don't mind him because at least he is a starter, as you mentioned. It's just, can he stay healthy for once? And what do they do at that position? For me, there's a kid that I like quite a bit at the catching position. And I'm not alone. His name has actually been mentioned way more than I expected so far this draft season. And that is Jimmy Crooks of St. Louis. He's going to be 24 this season, a pretty good catching prospect. Now, yes, I'll preface. Ivan Herrera is supposed to catch more. They still have Pedro Páez. They brought Pozo back to a deal. There's a lot of moving parts with the catching position, but Crooks is the future at the catching position for the Cardinals. He's kind of their next Ivan Herrera, honestly. The dude's hits 270 or better through almost every step of the minors. The dude has 15-plus home run power throughout the minor. He steals a few bags. Strikeout rate could be a little better. In the minors was fine. In his 46 plate appearances in the bigs last year, he had a homer, struck out 37%. I'll give that a grain of salt at 23 years old. The kid's super talented, and he has an ADP of 589, essentially, over the last 10 DCs. Yeah. So I'd prefer him to be like my fourth catcher. I know a lot of people are taking him as their third, but especially with the Pozo move of late, I'd prefer him to be my fourth. But I feel like he's a guy, if he were to get run, like I said about Herrera probably two seasons ago, I was very excited about the skill set with Crooks. So it's a pure speculate play. Like we talked about the primer, if you're taking a fourth outfielder, those are the ones you can take catcher. Those are the ones you take a chance on. Crooks would be that chance I would be willing to take. And I'll leave it there before I mention my long shot guy in a second.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at St. Louis's roster, man. They've got like four catchers.
Yeah, they DFA'd Pozo. This should be
your favorite team. Oh, they DFA'd Pozo.
They non-tendered him, and then they assigned him back to a one-year deal, like to save money. It's annoying.
Okay, so there's Ivan Herrera, there's Pedro Páez, there's Yoel Pozo, and there's your bot.
Technically, Wilson Contreras. If you really want
Wilson
to get
Contreras, about it. Yeah. If he's on the Cardinals, Jimmy Crooks.
Yeah, we'll see if there's some trades to get made. Maybe Jimmy Crooks gets traded.
Yep. Like, there will be, the Cardinals are actually a team. There are other Cardinals on our lists here. The Cardinals will be well represented for reasons that we'll talk about later on with the team here.
Yeah. And I'll save my comment on that later. Now there's one name I just want to throw out there because it is catching world and that's what we do. And I will preface this, as we found out before the show, that Rafael Flores of the Pittsburgh Pirates is first base on NFBC. But if you're taking long shots, this is a guy that I'm very highly interested in. He played seven games in the minors last year. He played six at first, one at catcher. That's one reason why he's first base eligible. His ADP 747, so he's one of the very last picks right now. Rafael Flores was a catcher in the Yankee system before a trade with, I believe, the David Bednar deal. Flores came over. So keep that in mind. Rafael Flores, and when I looked at his profile, I thought this is the next Goose. This is a Gustin Ramirez. When you look at the skill set of Rafael Flores, now does he catch? Well, most say Goose won't catch long either, so remember that. But we're looking at, I think Goose is better, but Flores is a better average guy. He's hits like a 280 batting average in the minor leagues, and he's 24 as well. He's got low 20s, maybe 25 home run pops. He's going to steal you 6 to 10 bases. So he's got a little of that power speed like Goose has. Maybe a better average Goose might have more speed. But a guy can get super late. I think he's a better catcher than Henry Davis. I think he should be backing up Joey Bart. And I also think that we all know Joey Bart's going to maybe play anywhere from 90 to 110 games because he will get hurt at some point in time. So there's a window where Flores plays. Also, if you believe in projections, Death Charps has him playing 79 games, he's hitting 9 homers and stealing 2 bags. If you play 79 games, I think that's low. They have him hitting 236 also. So I just want to throw him out. If you want a deep, deep dart, he's going to be first base to start. I would imagine he gets catcher eligibility unless the Pirates really stick him at first base. He's been a catcher throughout the entire minors. So I wanted to throw that one out there as well.
Baby Goose. Do you know the proper name for a baby goose? That's what I was Googling while you were talking about all this.
I saw a smirk on your face. I was wondering what you were up to. Baby Goose. Something with an ING at the end. I don't know. What is it?
It is. Yeah. It's a gosling or a goosling. I don't know how it's
It's a gosling. Gosling. I was going to say
a gosling.
I almost said like geedling or something, but gosling. Yeah. I knew it was an ING at the end.
Yes. Goslings are covered in downy feathers when they hatch, can walk and swim within 24 hours. That's wow. That's better than human kids.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Some goslings.
Yeah, I got some of them running around the Bloom compound. Your dad would love those if he came back from the East Coast with those running around. Be a happy man.
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Let's head to first base. That's kind of the segue there, using the guy that's first base eligible that could gain you some catcher. What do you have for your first baseman?
So this is, again, I'm trying to mix a little bit of playing time with upside. I'm going to go Christian Encarnacion Strand, who maybe this never comes together for Christian Encarnacion Strand, but I think this is still someone who it's too early to give up on this guy. Age 25, a season coming up. 2023 does exist for Christian Encarnacion Strand. He came up late, 13 homers, 241 plate appearances. Yes, playing time is a major hurdle right now for CES, but again, all these guys are going to have warts. I think this is someone who is young enough, has shown it in the majors, and all he needs is an injury or two, and Christian Encarnacion Strand is back and playing. So again, this late in the draft, things are very thin. I'm going to take someone who at least has some promise. If it doesn't work out, he just doesn't play, that's fine. But this is more of a, for me, an upside than a playing time thing for CES. I'm not giving up on him quite yet, and the price is super cheap.
Yeah, this is the kind of guy I think is great to target at this point in time, because I had a ton of CES last year. We all know how that ended. And drafting Sal Stewart. Everyone's giving up on CES. This is like, it's an injury away from him getting run again. And the skills, we know the skills are there, to your point. 2023 happened. So yep. I think it's a great one to take if, you know, maybe it's one of those red boxes we talked about on the primer, or it turns into a guy that becomes quite serviceable to you at some point in the season. That ballpark plays, folks. So, yeah, I don't hate that at all. Mine's a guy that many people go like, what are you doing, Bubba? But I find myself in DC's quite attractive to the pick of Jake Bowers at pick 589. And this is why it's not sexy. I understand. But we're talking about a guy every single season, even as a platoon player, has played at least 84 games, at least 84. He's had over 115 three times. So he's getting plenty of playing time. He's going to have runs. He's had double digit home runs in four out of those six seasons. He is 30 years old. It feels like he's been around forever. Also, average is not great, but the reason I bring him up is he will play a lot, like a lot more than people think. And when we're talking playing time in later rounds, Jake Bowers had some serious runs last year when he came back from the IL before Rhys Hoskins came back. He would allow Vaughn to sit once in a while. He'd play in the outfield a lot when Yelich was banged up. Like, he filled in all over the place for Milwaukee, and I foresee that happening again this year. If he gives you 80 to 90 games, maybe he sneaks into 100, you're going to use him in a DC more than you think. You really will. And I think that's a guy that brings value. He's got the first base slash corner. He's got the outfield, so he can roam around for you. Again, not a ceiling play, but it's more of a, like, I have a lot of these, kind of like, they're not sexy at all, but they're guys that you will utilize throughout the season. And Jake Bowers is one of them.
And you never know, right? Like, especially streaming wise, for whatever team Bowers plays for, will play for, who knows? But like, if there's a week where it's six righties, I mean, that if you get to use someone like Bowers for three, four times a
he's
year,
he's on
like
the Brewers.
That, yeah, will he be on the Brewers? Is no, the thing. Is. I
was traded.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Brewers have other options, but yeah, who knows? Just in weeks where there are six or seven righties, that's a useful spot to use Bowers. So I get it.
And I don't want to be the negative Nancy to many. What if Andrew Vaughn reverts back to who Andrew Vaughn sure. was? Then yep. a real platoon question becomes in play.
And I guess Hoskins is not on the Brewers anymore. So that maybe they bring him back, but that hurdle is cleared as well. So,
yep.
So yeah.
All right. Second base. Who do you have here? I love this pick at second base for multiple reasons. If you didn't take him, I would have at one of the three positions he can play. So what do you have for second base?
I'm going to try and unveil a new nickname. We'll see how this one works.
Oh, this ought to be good. Just the look on your face. Oh, God. I can't wait.
So this guy's first, second, and outfield eligible. He's got plenty of tools, and his name is Tim Tawa. No. So we're going to call him Tim the Tool Man Tawa.
I knew where that was going immediately.
He's pretty good, man. Come it's on, bad. Little home improvement, throwback. if Tim the Toolman Tala ever becomes good this year, that I think that's going to stick, because not only does he have tools, he's got power or speed, man. He only hit 200 or whatever.
Those are tools, right?
But yeah, exactly. He had 7 homers, 8 steals, and 225 plate appearances with the D-backs last year. That's toolsy. And he's also toolsy in terms of you can use him at corner, middle, outfield. Like that is pretty damn sweet. Tim Tawa, kind of a minor league legend, hit 201 in the majors last year. So his first taste of MLB pitching did not go very well. And that's probably going to happen. So yes, there are playing time concerns with Tim the Toolman Tawa, but if you're, the multi-position eligibility works in your favor many different ways, and that he can actually has 3 different avenues for regular playing time for the Diamondbacks. I think over a season that playing time is going to open up. So Tim Tawa is one of my favorite. I've taken him in both of my draft and holds so far this season. Love the tools. Love the tools. We'll leave it at that.
Tim, the tool man, Tawa. I like it. I dig it. It's something I would have come up with, so I'm proud of you on that. I guess definitely for the future 2026 Bubba and the Bloomies, we have our first nickname of the season, I believe.
Yeah, so, that's true. That's so,
here we go.
Man, hopefully we get something better, but we got something in our back pocket.
We will, because, Goose will never leave. The good doctor will never leave. Like, those will carry on forever. But I like it. Tawa had his moments. There was definitely some fab periods last year where it's almost like everyone's waiting for Blaze Alexander not to succeed, and Blaze did just enough to keep his role, because everyone's thinking Tawa was going to come take it essentially. And that was kind of the slowdown there. So yeah, I could see it at that ADP. All right. For me, I changed my pick to this one. I'll mention my other one. It's not going to be a pick, but just for people drafting, I think there's viability, but I'm going to go with Nick York. This is the guy I think people were speculating on last year when it comes to Nick York. So you mentioned a lot of Cardinals. Well, we're going to talk about Pirates on this show too. Bad teams get late picks. That's the best way I can put it when in the DC world. Right now, Nick York has an ADP of 563, which is not too bad. But what Nick York has is he'll be 24 this year, and he's expected to be the starting second baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And that's kind of what people were hoping for at times last year. He hit 7 homers and stole 17 bags of AAA, 1 homer, 1 steal in 22 games in the bigs. But he's got a very good hit tool. You usually hit over 300 every level of the minors. He was walking over 10% of the time, striking out less than 20% almost every stop of the minors. Limited power, probably 10 to 15 homers at best, but a ton of speed as well. So it's like a Chase Mydroth type profile. Everyone knows who Chase Mydroth is. Nick York is basically a very similar skill set to Chase Mydroth. And if York gets the everyday playing time, again, this comes back to getting a starting player post 500 is tremendous. Like, you're going to get at least 130 games, hopefully. You can utilize that a ton throughout the season. Your guy Nick Gonzalez, he fits that mold. There's a lot of that. I hope I didn't. Yeah, you didn't have him on the list. Okay, good. So those kind of Pirates players, like Nick York, is to me a pretty valuable one at second base.
I do like Nick Gonzalez still. So there will be a I don't really like Nick Gonzalez, but I do think he'll play. It'll be interesting to see how that battle shapes out in Pittsburgh. Nick York versus Nick Gonzalez. Maybe it won't be that interesting.
Right now they have Gonzalez playing shortstop and York playing second.
Yeah, which Gonzalez did play some short last year, so yeah, I don't know.
It could happen the way their team
could happen.
The honorable mention I want to bring up, because it was a popular name last year, and he broke camp as the starting second baseman before an injury. And that's Ryan Bliss. His ADP 741. I just noticed it when I was scrolling around. I wouldn't sleep on that one, because I think a healthy Ryan Bliss and all that speed he brings is way better than any Cole Young, Louis Rivas platoon that they're speculating on right now. I think a healthy Ryan Bliss potentially takes that job back, and he is a last-round pick right now in DC's.
Let's not besmirch the name of Mariners postseason legend Leo Rivas on the show here, Bubba. Come on. What's that?
What round was that in?
Leo Rivas?
Yeah.
The DS.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
Game 5. But yes, did not finish out strong. Let's see. Shortstop. This guy's also second base. I'm going to go your guy from last year, Thomas Tejasi. Yep. This is my Cardinals point. I think the Cardinals are going to be sellers this offseason. Obviously, they just moved Sonny Gray for some prospects. Nolan Arenado is rumored to be on the move. I just think this could be a team ripe for playing time for new guys this year. And I think Thomas Ajayi, who is flexible enough defensively, will be able to get somewhat regular playing time in 2026. Don't love the skills, but qualifies it at multiple positions. Modest five category type guy. I think this is someone you can use in middle or corner, and probably will use a few times next year. And that's what you're looking for in these late picks. So not the highest ceiling for Sajayi, but I like the flexibility, and I think the playing time, in spots will be there on a Cardinals team that I think is. There will be playing time opportunities on the Cardinals. We'll just leave it at that.
Yep. So JC is a phenomenal pick. That would have probably been my pick in this world. So fully endorsed that. I would have gone back to back seasons with him, because I think he does play a ton, hits for average, maybe more pop than people think. So fully on board with you there. We were texting before the show, because at first you said Mauricio Dubon, WTF. And I said, yeah, I get it. But first off, when you look at Mauricio Dubon, a few things to keep in your back pocket. Mauricio Dubon, second base, third base, shortstop, outfield. That's gold. That's gold in a DC. Secondly, he's played at least 130 games in three straight seasons because of that flexibility. So you can utilize his, if you want to just build counting stats, as we've talked about, helps a ton. He'll hit for an average more often than not, a pretty good average. Not a whole lot else comes with it. Be completely transparent with you there. But he's also expected to be the starting shortstop for a Braves team, which I would hope signs a shortstop. I would hope signs one. Let's be real. But they've done weirder things in Atlanta of late. So I'm just bringing up Dubon because the where I was going with this in our texting, shortstop sucks late. Unless you want, there's a ton of prospects you could speculate on, a ton. So that's why I want to bring this up. Like Dubon, yes, I get it. It's not sexy. He's great for DCs because he can play everywhere and he will play a lot. But don't wait on having at least three shortstops. Have three before pick 500. Let's put it
I think that's the biggest takeaway. Remove the minute of your life that you listen to Bubba wax poetic over Mauricio Dubon and take that last takeaway.
Let me go.
You want that third shortstop somewhat early. We everyone thinks shortstop synonymous with depth. Shortstop might have been the hardest one for me to pick. Honestly, on this whole ADP team, it's pretty brutal in these late round shortstop is. So don't just assume because it's deep position for the starters that it's also deep for reserves. I don't think it is.
Yep, totally agree. I think it's not deep because the starters are so good. There's not a lot of playing time to go around.
Yeah.
You get elsewhere.
Yep.
All right. Let's head to third base. I'm really curious what you got here, unless it's just playing time.
Yeah. So I'm taking who I think will be the starting third baseman for the Colorado Rockies this year, going outside the top 500. That's Kyle Karros. I think pretty good hit tool in the minors. I think the glove is good enough that he's going to keep that playing time, at least for now, to see, what the bat can do in the majors. And with any Rockies hitter, it's someone you can stream at home. So I just think there's going to be some times where the Rockies either at home all week or home for half weeks and you need a corner or you need a utility, and Kyle Karros is sitting there and he's playing, and you just never know. I mean, Kyle Karros is 23. Like, you just never know with some of these young guys, like, is some type of light going to come on? You don't need to pay much to find out. Obviously, that's why this show is what it is. I'm just going to take someone who I think is going to start for the Rockies in post 500. I think that works.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's it's fair, especially if he is a starting third baseman. I think that goes a long ways to your point. And he's young, skill sets. You just kind of buy on that stuff late, especially in a bad position. I'm going with Curtis Mead. It's similar young skill set. He doesn't have the job right away. We saw him play a ton he played 90 games last year between the two teams he was on. Only hit three homers, stole five bags. So, it wasn't a ringing endorsement. But this is a guy that, in Tampa Bay, there was a lot of hype behind him. He's only going to be 25 this year. He's still super young. I feel like we've been talking Curtis Mead for a while. He's shown like 15 home run pop. He can steal some bags, hits for average in his limited time in the minors. It's a skill set that on a White Sox team where we see youngsters play a lot, I think you could go with it. He's first base, third base. They have Lydon Sosa at first. They have Mydroth, Montgomery, Vargas around the infield, Caro at DH. Someone's getting hurt. That's just how it works. And it's just reality.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And all those guys can play other positions. That leads Meade can fill in a corner, is my point. And that opens up an avenue there. And I think there's a lot of skills. Like Meade feels like a young Aranda for Tampa Bay. Like the hype, what we saw. He just needs the playing time. So if you were like specking late, I don't mind Curtis Meade in round like almost pick 600.
And how often did we say in Fab shows second half of last year, oh, the White Sox actually have a bunch of usable guys. And yep. I think Curtis Meade could step into that in 26. I like that move, actually. Not bad.
All right. Not bad. Let's go with your first outfielder. We'll go back and forth on the outfielders.
All right. Yeah. Another Cardinal play. This is a little bit non-Bloom. This is a pure prospect who I don't think has even made his MLB debut yet. That's Joshua Baez for the Cardinals. I mean, the minor league numbers look incredible for this guy. 331 plate appearances in AA last year, a 139 WRC plus, pretty good strikeout rate, 16 homers and 34 bags in the minors for Joshua Baez. And what I said earlier about the Cardinals stands true, not only for the infield, but the outfield as well. I think at some point there's going to be a playing time opportunity for Joshua Baez. I don't think it's probably in the first half. I think you're probably waiting in the second half of the season, but when you've got guys like Alec Burleson, you've got Lars Nootbaar, noted to be injured often in the two corner spots, Burleson can play in the infield. I think there's enough flexibility there with the Cardinals roster that Joshua Baez can get a call later on, and you never know. I mean, maybe comes up and doesn't do anything, but I at least think Joshua Baez is going to get a chance in the second half, and I really like at least when I'm scouting the stat line in the minors for Baez. I think this is someone who not only has the skills, but has enough playing time in AA already entering the season, where if he gets another half season, either in AA or AAA, he's going to be ready for a call up.
Yeah, no, I could see that for sure. I got to your point. There's gonna be a lot of the Cardinals could be like the White Sox this year in terms of young guys getting their chances. Just keep that in mind. There's a lot of that coming your way. All right, I'm going to buy back in on a young guy that kind of struggled in his first go-around, the big, that's Robert Hassel III. Was a big-time prospect with the Padres, came over in the Soto deal, finally got his cup of coffee last year at age 23, so he'll be 24 this year. Only hit three homers and stole four bags in 70 games, but prior to that in AAA, 10 homers, 16 steals. So he got a little power, a ton of speed. There's like a couple 30 stolen base seasons. Usually hits for average in the minors more often than not. Again, super young guy. Like he struck out low 20%, high teens in the minors, struck out 30% at the big league level. He seemed overwhelmed, let's put it that way. This is a Nats team we know that will play their youngsters more often than not. Like he could platoon. There's a world where that happens. But there's also a world where Robert Hassel figures things out. And then we get to see this guy that plays every single day. And he's, you know, getting you 10 to 15 homers and stealing you 25 to 30 bags. And now he's hitting towards the top of the order. Now he's getting on base tons and scoring a ton of runs because the Nats will run like crazy. Like it's pure speculation. But this is also like your 11th, 12th outfielder. His ADP is 544. Like I think there's a lot of optimism you can find with Robert Hassel III.
I mean, I liken this back to my Brett Beatty call last year. Just someone, it just didn't work out the first couple times in the majors. And Hassel's prospect stock has admittedly dropped in recent years. But that's why these guys are so cheap, is because that first go-around doesn't go so well. And that doesn't mean subsequent attempts will. So I agree with you on the playing time. I think Washington's going to play him, maybe platoon, but we'll see. But at least he's got a shot. And that's all you're asking for at this point.
Yep. Who is your second outfielder?
I mean, whenever you can take an old coming off of serious knee surgery,
ACL. Yes.
You absolutely have to do it. So I'm going to take Lourdes Gurriel. I mean, I think Lourdes Gurriel is good. He's been good. He's been serviceable in the majors for like his entire career. Yes, tore his ACL in September. So he is out roughly 9 to 12 months from that surgery last September. So I'm only counting on Lourdes Gurriel to be back for maybe August and September next season. But again, this is someone you're getting in like the 45th round of a 15 teamer. If anyone's played a bunch of draft and holds, you know, by the end of the season, your outfield is decimated. most of the time, especially if you don't get enough. If you only draft 10 or 11 outfielders, this could be your 12th. Getting a month or two of Lourdes Gurriel at the end of the season when you need healthy bodies the most is, I think, a pretty attractive play right now. Yes, there's concern, of course, if the rehab goes awry, but I'm more willing to speculate on hitters coming off of major surgeries than I am with pitchers. I just don't think the kind of the setback risk is as much for hitters as opposed to pitchers coming off Tommy John or arm stuff. So I think if you can get Lourdes Gurriel for the last month or two, last 6 weeks of the season, and you get what he's done in previous years in the 45th round, I think that works. I think that works with your team, especially at the end of the year when you've got all those red suitcases, all those injured guys. To get somebody coming back like that can be a nice little kind of sneaky late ad for you.
Yeah, I can see it. I'm not going to be opposed to it at all. You got to hope he comes back. That's all it is. Just hope it's the
short.
There's
risk. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's risk. There's a setback in the knee. But I don't know. ACL surgery, it's pretty common. I don't know. You never know. But I'm banking on like 6 weeks of Lourdes.
Yeah, I get it. All right. For me, it's, you want to talk boring as boring gets, but listeners out there, raise your hand if you've ever rostered Kyle Isbell in a DC, because I think I have him every single season. Yeah. Seems like he's one of my most rostered DC plays every single season, because right now Kyle Isbell has an ADP of 726. 726 right now. Dude's played 135 and 136 games last 2 years, double-digit steals in one of the seasons. He's not going to do a ton, but he's going to play a ton. He hit 255 this last year. He's at 240 2 years ago. Like, again, not an amazing skill set, but, man, if he hits that projection of 10 homers, 11 steals, 248, don't believe that, but that'd be awesome. He's just going to play a ton. He's going to play a ton, and he's that guy that you mentioned, Lourdes Gurriel, in the last couple months of the season coming back because you're going to need outfielders. Isbell's that dude. And he might platoon, but he's on the strong side of it. Like, I play him all the time. I'll have him again this year, and we just roll.
Yeah, we roll. I don't know where you're rolling to, but I hear you. Someone who's going to play. I mean, the Royals have had their chances to replace Kyle Isbell, and like they never have. So I don't see that changing. So yeah, if you want a guy who's going to play, he's going to breathe, why not?
Wow, that's a ringing endorsement. All right, let's go to the mound. Give me one of your pitchers.
It's going to be the infamous Gibson Long. When you said on a show a couple years ago, was called up, and I'd never heard of him. I actually thought his name was Gibson Long. This is Sawyer Gibson Long, who missed most of 2025, recovering from, I believe, Tommy John. Only threw, how many innings did he throw? Yeah, 31 innings with Detroit last year. It was 7 ERA. It was not very good. However, when I look at the swinging strike rate, when I look at the ball rate, kind of those sub indicators that I talk about all the time for pitching in the major leagues, those were actually pretty good. Really good ball percentage, a 12% swinging strike. Like Sawyer Gibson Long was able to throw strikes and able to miss bats, even though the surface stats weren't there in pretty much an audition for 2026. So there's a chance Sawyer Gibson Long doesn't start the season in Detroit's rotation. I certainly admit that there aren't many guys with skills that start in the rotation that are available post 500 ADP. So that's where we are. I just think if you're a 6 or 7 starter on any team, at some point you're going to get those opportunities because pitchers get hurt. I think Sawyer Gibson Long actually showed some decent skills last season. And if he gets another shot in the rotation in 2026, I think he can do some things for you.
Yep. No, that's fair. We've loved that skill set. The guy I'm going with is Spencer Arrighetti. Yep. I'm actually shocked about this ADP. I remember the first time I saw it in a draft, I'm like, what are we doing here? ADP is 543. I get it. He's coming off an elbow injury. He almost pitched in the postseason last year. They say he's 100%. Like, he's already ramping up for spring training. Yeah, elbow injuries are always scary. I'm not going to deny that at all. But it's not like we're taking Brian Wu at pick 88 right now. We're taking Spencer Arrighetti at 545. And he threw 46 innings last year due to injuries, the freak injury that he had no control over on the batting practice, a broken hand, I believe. But prior to that, 145 innings in 2024, he entered last year. We were all speculating on how good could he be. He's better than Hunter Brown. All those kind of conversations were out there. Like, if he can even give me 100 innings this year at that ADP, I'm all in. Like, he's projected to be the fifth starter in Houston. I it's too good to pass up, essentially. So I'll take the gamble on his health. I'll see what we can get. Get me at least 15 starts, and I'm a very, very happy man.
I agree with you. I'm trying to look up Spencer Agetti's ADP last year. It was, what was it at? It was 192 last year. So Spencer Agetti was a very kind of sexy play. A lot of smart people were on Agetti, and now he's going post 500, obviously because of the elbow. I think that's why. But someone who's just 26 years old that smart folks were high on just 12 months ago. I think you can play that kind of post injury rebound card and see what it does for you. So yeah, like Agetti was awful last year, but I think you have to give him somewhat of a pass given all the injuries.
Yep, totally agree. Who's your next starting pitcher?
I'm going to go Jack Perkins for the West Sacramento. Is it West Sacramento Athletics? Yes. Don't love the fly ball rate in that park. So this may just be like a road streaming type thing if Perkins even gets in the A's rotation next season. But I just see someone who missed a ton of bats, was skills were really good as a kind of long reliever type. You're taking a little bit of a leap of faith that those strikeout skills will translate to a, you know, 5 and 6 inning spurts. But again, you're sticking your neck out for a lot of these guys. So Jack Perkins, I think if he gets a spot, if he's able to kind of hold those skills in the rotation, did get hurt the end of last season with a shoulder. So that's always a concern. But someone who's 26 years old can miss bats, get Ks, and I think has a reasonable shot because the A's are going to be so bad to get in the rotation. And so for all those reasons, I think Jack Perkins is a decent spec. I'm not expecting much, if anything, but I think the upside is there that you can work with it.
Yeah. No, I like the Jack Perkins call. It wasn't too long ago on a Fab show, everyone was running to pick up Jack Perkins. So
yep, he was
going to be a closer. Now he's a great starter. And now no one's remembering to draft him. There's a lot of A's in that world, like Luis Morales, who was good for a while, and then things like there's a handful. Jacob Lopez is maybe not that late, but same theory. There's the A's pitchers. Everyone's really worried about that ballpark, but in a draft and hold, folks, you don't have to pitch them at home. That's a beautiful thing. Like you have depth to it. So
that point
you can run with that.
Point I made when we were talking Mitchell Parker and Cade Povich a few shows ago. It's just with lefties, like there are times where you can stream these guys, and if you use them 7-8 times in a season and they work for you this late in the draft, that's a win.
Yep, agreed. For me, I just had to do it to stay on brand for the show. Just had to do it. ADP of 645, give me all the Bryce Elder, all of it. It's one of my last picks in a 50. Like, he's one of the last round picks. I will have a lot of shares of that. It's a combination of, he's not in the rotation technically right now, but let's also be real about who's in that rotation for Atlanta. There will be openings at times. And you've even admitted the skills aren't as bad as people think. He has some decent skills, especially the ADP of 645. So I'll take my Bryce Elder shots all day long.
You'll be taking shots, that's for sure.
Yes. All right, let's head to the bullpen. Who do you have for your speculation?
Yeah, I like your pick better than mine because the Rays
picked first too.
I know, I did pick first. Ray's bullpen is rather cloudy right now, but I'm going to go Brian Baker, who I just think has really good skills. And I don't see the Rays signing a closer in 2026. There is competition there with Edwin Uceta, Griffin Jackson, maybe Garrett Clevenger. But I think Brian Baker has the skills to be a decent closer if he wins the job. There's a chance. I mean, the state only got a couple saves last season because it was all Fairbanks. There's a chance they want to keep Griffin. I mean, this is the Rays, right? There's a chance you want to keep Griffin Jacks in that kind of fireman role or whatever. So I think there's actually a chance for Brian Baker to there's some upward mobility there. Maybe if you get 10 saves or something out of him and if you can time it right, that works. But I'll go Brian Baker.
Well, on the bright side, your guy is on a team at the moment, so that helps him a lot. I like Sean Armstrong a ton. We talked about Sean Armstrong last year. I think I wrote about him in one of my PT tomorrows, like a few weeks before he had the chance to get saves in Texas. The skill sets are very good with Sean Armstrong. He had a 2.31 ERA this past season in 74 innings. He did pick up 9 saves to go with 4 wins. He had a 19% K to walk due to a 26.1% strikeout rate. 0.81 whip. Like, he does everything a back end of the reliever you're looking for. Is he a closer full time? Who knows? He showed out well when he had the chance, 10.3% swinging strike. So I like the upside there. There's a ton of free agent arms, as we know, in the bullpen. ADP of 547. I could see the Rangers bringing him back, honestly.
That's what I was just thinking. Like, why wouldn't the Rangers just bring him back?
Yeah, so like I think there's a world where Charmant, he'll be a cheaper option than some of the others out there. I'll speculate on that, because even if he doesn't come into an automatic spot, I think he'll get his throughout the season. So he's a guy I like a ton. There's a lot of intriguing spec slate in the relief pitching world, especially with all the openness right now.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I just haven't in my prep. I haven't dove that deep. You have, because you're writing relievers for the Black Book, so you're at an advantage there. That's probably something I need to look at very, very soon. This one I felt uncomfortable with looking at late relievers.
I'll just throw one name out there and people can research this on their own. But he's going at pick 720, and he's a White Sox reliever, Mike Vessel. Just go check that one out. That's a late game pick I like a ton, because if Jordan Leisure ain't the closer, they already said Grant Taylor is not going to be the closer. I'm not saying Jordan Leisure won't. He should be. But Vassil should be next man up.
Right. Mike Vassil, Vassil. I have
over 100 innings out of the pen last year.
Have seen his name before. Quite the forecaster write up for Mike Vassil. That's pretty funny.
I don't know if that's a ringing endorsement or not.
Yeah.
Does it involve Vaseline?
No. It involves an 80s.
That would have been my easy way out.
An 80s sitcom. So. Before my time.
Okay, so I can already guess who the writer might be. But all right. So any other thoughts on your picks before we take a few Discord questions that I have to go navigate?
Yeah, go navigate. It's all show questions channel is all messed up.
Yeah, it's all good. I'm used to it. All right. Then
Sikolsky,
that's the third time you mentioned something here. What catcher two do you prefer post pick 500 for Bean, Bailey, Caratini, or Amaya?
I concede to you. You're the catcher man.
For me, it's for me, like better batting average. I just took Bailey as my catcher three. Both of those are catcher threes. I don't have any of these guys as catcher twos. If I had to take a catcher two, it's Amaya, just hoping he gets the playing time and he has the best skills. But I go for me and Bailey as my top. They're probably towards the top of my catcher three options, honestly.
I actually like a bunch of. Actually, Bailey's the one I like the least, but he's probably got the safest playing time.
That's where I go with it. Is he's locked in. And again, small sample. Look at his just like September alone. Dude looked like a completely different hitter. Completely different hitter.
Yeah. So of that group for me and Bailey Caratini, I think Amaya's the best. Is he going to play? Don't know. Yep.
Carson Kelly's still there. Ballesteros is DH, but maybe he eventually gets some runs. So there's questions to be had in Chicago. Ben Bingham says, we'll get to him later.
No, he made fun of me. Ben makes fun of me for taking retired players or guys who have gone overseas or are in jail. So that's where a lot of my late round picks go.
All right. King Curland, he's the culprit for most of this. Says, how about discussing how you go about prepping for this depth of the pool? Always a fan of discussing process. So how do you go about discussing the depth of the pool, Ryan?
I led off with this at the top. I try and mix in a few upside plays with guys who I think who are going to get playing time. For me, that's the biggest thing. I think you need to, and it's very hard in November, right? We don't know where free agency is going to land with a bunch of these teams. If for me, it's what is the path to playing time? What is the path to getting regular at-bats at some point in the season? For me, that's always top of mind. You can have the best skills or whatever. If the playing time path isn't there, I'm probably not taking you. So it's really kind of a team by team playing time look and what the path is. That's pretty much the first spot I go to with these late picks.
Yep, playing time for me for sure. We're both not prospect guys, so a lot of it's playing time. And honestly, it's why I do so many of these, is to keep getting reps and seeing names and seeing certain players go in more often than I'm like, okay, then who's this guy? Like, that's why is he getting picked so much? Those kind of activities to figure it out.
Yep.
Ben Bingham says, how do you approach this part of the pool in terms of looking for playing time versus upside? Does it depend on your, so it's kind of what we just talked about.
Yeah. The second part was, does it depend on team construction to this point? I think so. So I think, I mean, example of this, like I mentioned, Christian Encarnacion Strand. I don't know if the playing time is going to be there, but I like the upside. I'm more willing to do that if I feel good about my starters playing time at first base. So I try and balance that out, where if I've got, you know, if I wait late second base or late shortstop for my actual starter, I will more likely go with someone who may not have the highest ceiling, like a Sejesi, but I think could get playing time. So it does, for me, depend a little bit on who I took as my starter and maybe even first reserve at each position, and try and balance that out.
And then Callan says, is there anyone going post 500 that you're most confident will be a mainstay in drafts come March? So a guy that basically becomes a top 350 pick is what I would say.
Off the top of my head, no. The only, I mean, so without naming a specific player, and I'll kind of stall here, so maybe you can think of somebody. It's either going to be a free agent that's signed somewhere, and now falls into playing time,
like or a reliever,
or right, exactly, or a spot that reliever opens up and has a somewhat clear shot at saves, and that's someone who's going to shoot up.
Yeah, the reliever is a big one, to the point like if an injury takes place, now a guy's got playing time. That would be another one that takes a big jump. Otherwise, like, I don't think there's any sure thing, period, with these post-500s. Most of them are down here because they requires an injury or something to surpass them. Like, a guy I could see getting some love, just going through here real quick, Grant Holmes, if he looks good in spring, people buy back in that, oh, he didn't need surgery after all, and now he's getting picked late. That's a guy. Again, it goes back to the spring training health conversation, but he's a name that – I've already seen bandied about a lot, like either people making fun of, oh, look, he's fine, he didn't need surgery, or, you know, should he have had surgery? Like, there's that back and forth going on there. There's a couple of the foreign players that we're still waiting information on. So that could change things a bit to be a late round pick come March. Those would be my top ones, but you never know. Like, it'll obviously come down to injuries or a free agent more often than not.
Yes. Agreed.
All right. Well, that'll wrap us up. Any final thoughts on the draft champions week at Bubba and the Bloom?
No, I'll get into a draft and hold with us. In the Discord, we always kind of advertise when we jump in our next draft, and usually the leagues fill quite quickly. So this has been a good primer for me, both in terms of strategy on the first episode and some of these late guys. I have already actually put a couple of your picks here in my current queue for my draft. So I can blame you when it does not work out. No. Hope everyone's enjoying Thanksgiving weekend. Hope everyone had a fun and safe holiday. I think we'll be back to live shows next week, including episode 300, which is
300. Oof.
Pretty wild. This was 298. So next Thursday, I assume, unless something happens, will be episode 300. We'll, I don't know, maybe think of something there. But no, that's all I got, man. Go Hokies. Yeah. Beat the Cavs.
I just wanted to say, surprisingly enough, it's rivalry weekend, one of the best college football weekends every season, because it's a bunch of Friday games and Saturday games.
Yep.
And you or I have not mentioned it once this entire week, which is pretty impressive, considering our basically second love is either golf or college football. Just basically the way things go.
I'm as a VT fan, I'm ready for the season to end. Let's get to next season.
You're ready to see all these new commits coming.
We do have some commits rolling in. The first commit in the James Franklin era, his first name is Messiah. So
it's a sign.
It's off to a good start, man. Messiah Mickens.
And the bright side also is you might get a home Eugene playoff game. I heard it's a hot ticket. So you might have that going for you as well.
Could see if I can make it. We'll see.
All right. We'll wrap it up there again. As Ryan said, hope you guys all had a good Thanksgiving, enjoying the weekend with friends, family, or whatever you are up to. Make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm BD Intrick, and this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 298. Catch y'all next time.